Now, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by the new member of the Westminster Parliament for Belfast South, member of Parliament for the SDLP, Claire Hanna. Claire, thank you very much for joining us. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Claire, it's obviously been a very busy week for you. We could talk about the effect of Brexit in the North and devolution and a border poll and everything else. So we'll get to all of those in a moment. But obviously, it's been a pretty busy and hectic week for you, taking up residence in Westminster, making your own maiden speech, which by your own admission was a little bit quicker than you'd planned it to be during the week. First of all, your impressions of Westminster and the week that it has been?
Yeah, I mean, you're right about a bit of a whirlwind. Feels like a few weeks ago rather than just 8 days, the election. I mean, first impressions, I mean, it is, fair to say, quirky, stroke archaic in terms of the processes, but everybody's been very welcoming. It's daunting. You can see the size of the Conservative majority is laid out for you there every time you're in the chamber, but just determined to use the forum as well as we possibly can to mitigate the damage of Brexit.
Given the size of the Conservative benches that there are, and it's quite obvious that they have a pretty comfortable majority given the way it was illustrated with the passage of the Brexit bill through second stage on Friday, how much of an impression or an impact can you actually make in trying to articulate the points that you want to, given that ultimately Boris Johnson has the numbers to make his way happen no matter what?
More than a few people have said during the last week, you know, that it's unfortunate that over the last 2.5 years that I suppose the two larger parties that did have a mandate and could have, if not stopped, then seriously mitigated Brexit, weren't there. But look, I'm not one of these people who thinks that democracy is only about being the casting vote, that it doesn't matter unless you get to topple the pile one way or the other. You can, just with the force of a decent argument, I suppose, change the understanding. And it's fair to say that nobody, least of all Boris Johnson, knows exactly how the regulations will pertain to Northern Ireland and the island of Ireland. So there will be a lot of kind of tweaking and I suppose maximising access, single market for us, maximising the north-south dimension and pressing the UK government to fulfil their obligations on the rights agenda.
One way in which you went, I suppose viral is the right word really. Westminster has really been a manufacturer for viral footage in the last couple of days, but you yourself went viral in a little manner of speaking. We're going to play a little bit of audio of you taking the oath and being formally sworn in as an MP on Wednesday afternoon. Let's take a listen.
If you state your name and constituency.
Claire Hanna, Belfast South. I solemnly, sincerely and truly declare and affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, her heirs and successors, according to law. My allegiance is to the people of South Belfast, and in order to serve them, I've made this affirmation. My political commitment is to the Good Friday Agreement relationships in Northern Ireland, between North and South of Ireland, and between these islands, based on mutual respect and connection.
A little bit of applause there at the end from some of your supporters on the SNP benches. That was obviously,
and
indeed Labour, it must be said indeed. That was the first time that a lot of people have seen the oath having any kind of extra sort of words appended to it. At what point did it become, did you realise or did you decide that that was something you wanted to go down, that taking the oath was a formulaic thing that you had to do, but that you did want to kind of add that extra personalised note to it?
Yeah, I'll be honest, just before, and the response has taken me by surprise. Look, I was aware of the oath. It was never going to be a barrier to me representing my constituents. And while I do think it's outmoded, and as I said in my letter to the Speaker, it isn't good for trust in Parliament for the first word you utter to be something that isn't true. I took the affirmation rather than swearing an oath. I mean no disrespect to the Queen, who I've met when I was a councillor, and I understand that for many of my constituents they would have that attachment to the Queen, but I don't, and I don't believe that I would even if I were brought up and living in Britain. I just don't believe in monarchy as the model of the head of state. So I kind of hadn't, I must confess, given much thought to exactly how I would express it. I wasn't sure what the confines were of the rules, but I spoke to the Speaker just before and outlined my thoughts on it, and they were happy that I added, they say you can't say anything at the start, but I added at the end and I suppose expressed my reasoning in a letter to him.
Sure.
I suppose there are always going to be, and social media, there are always people with flags of various hues in their profile that are obsessed about things like that, about gestures like that, and would use it as an excuse not to go and limit the damage of Brexit, or on the other side of it, who said that I was being disrespectful to the Queen and to unionists. But I think most people accept that you've got to be true to yourself, but like any procedural hurdle to do in your job, if you really want to do it, you'll find a way around it.
Yeah, and I don't propose to relitigate the whole argument around abstentionism or the oath or whatever else, but I suppose just the one point to make about it is that when you're taking that affirmation, and you did mention your point about how your true allegiance was to the people of South Belfast and all that, but you are of course required, and you did precede that by saying that you swear that you'll be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, her heirs and successors. And you know, even though you were able to put the appendage afterwards, your own extra little note on it, Does it still grate with you that you were still required to do that, or that it's still part of the routine anyway?
I'll be honest, in a week where I'm trying to stop the emergency of Brexit, that just reopening old wounds, it is so low down my list of priorities. Those words aren't really true for me. They're not true for me, and they weren't the first things that I wanted to say. But I'm big and ugly enough not to obsess about things like that when there's people's jobs. And there's genuinely the protection of the Good Friday Agreement on the line. It's just low down my list of priority.
Okay, fair enough. We'll leave that one lie there, and we'll talk about the impact of Brexit. And you've mentioned that you want to try and use the parliamentary forum in as much as that's possible. Do you think that the method in which Boris Johnson is pursuing Brexit does have a risk of, to some degree, damaging cross-community trust that there is in Northern Ireland? Because we know how much the DUP's noses have been put out of joint by the mode in which he's gone down, where in effect we're going to have a land border imposed or implemented or policed at sea, and the sensitivity that has to unionists. Are you concerned that some of the peaceful settlement that we've had of the last 20 years or more could be undermined by the way in which the British government is going about it?
Oh, I'm genuinely concerned, and I think from the day in our Brexit was conceived, myself and others have been warning about that, because as I said in Westminster on Friday in my maiden speech, the Good Friday Agreement was about not having to talk about identity and sovereignty and borders and whether you look to London or Dublin. But because of Brexit, that's all we have to talk about now, and it does sharpen up all of those lines. And we know that, you know, borders aren't just a line from A to B. They're symbolic, and they do in ways reflect and shape people's identity. So there was no good way to do Brexit at all, and wherever the border landed, it was going to be a problem. But yes, I deeply regret that there'll be a border anywhere, and I deeply regret Boris Johnson's approach. We spoke a moment ago about priorities. I don't think the people of Northern Ireland or the island of Ireland figure anywhere in Boris Johnson's. I think he was boxed into eventually, after a couple of years of bluster about the alternative arrangements and it being like a tube ticket, etc., he was boxed into having to protect against the border on the island because his deal wasn't going to go any further. But I don't think he'll lose any sleep over the fact that he is opening old wounds in Northern Ireland.
But that being said, I mean, it must, I know that you, it's not necessarily the community that you'd aspire to represent, but there was a pretty significant
unionist. I just want to stop you there.
Sure.
It is the community that I aspire to represent. I mean this quite genuinely, and the election campaign that I fought and the politics that I practice are just post those lines. I just don't feel that I only speak for nationalists, and it's never something that I want to do. So the fact that many unionists are really discombobulated by Brexit, I'm not the type of person who thinks, oh, well, sure, slap it up them, let them have the border up the Irish Sea. I see genuine problems in that for the economy, but also for people's identity.
Okay. How much more likely do you think it is that in the wake of all of that, and with the, you know, the fact that now people are talking about the constitutional future of the North, the fact that you are among a larger population of nationalist or secessionist MPs, if you want to put it that way, than there are unionists who want to maintain the union, how much closer do you think a border poll has become because of the outcome of the election?
I think certainly because of Brexit, undoubtedly the dynamic has changed quite dramatically. And I'll be honest that 4 years ago, Irish unity wasn't something I thought about, you know, in the immediate sense. But I think Brexit has really underlined the power imbalance within the UK, and again, how little many politicians in London think about how things affect Northern Ireland. It is also, I suppose, the isolationism of the UK politics, and the fact that it's moving quite strongly to the right is a real push factor out of the UK, and indeed kind of more modern dynamic approach to politics, the governance, the social issues and so on in the South is a real pull factor.
What would be the threshold, by the way? What do you think? You know, because we know that ultimately a border poll can only happen when it's sanctioned by the Secretary of State, currently Julian Smith. And there's always been this ambiguity around what would be enough to convince him or to compel him to have to hold one anyway. Do you think that the outcome of the most recent Westminster election is such a verdict, or what
I
do you think is the threshold?
I think that's a really big question. I've said for a number of years, not just because of this election, I don't believe it should be based on election, because that allows people to turn every single election into a proxy border poll. And that's one of the things that has stopped us getting on with, you know, the practical business of actually trying to improve people's lives for so long. If people can say, well, look, this is about the border poll, when it isn't, you know. So I think potentially a question in the census would be a good way of kind of banking support that's more formal than just opinion polling, but that allows people, because I know 27,000 people in South Belfast voted for me. That's many, many thousands more than have voted for nationalist parties before in this constituency. So it would be entirely disingenuous of me to say, well, they're all now United Irelanders. They're not, and it's not fair of me to bounce them to that place. So something in the census potentially, and there's one coming up, I think in 2021, that allows people to give a view on A, whether there should be a border poll, and B, potentially how they might vote. I think there definitely does need to be clarity. It's frustrating that that's all in the hands of the UK Secretary of State. But I want to be quite clear. I think the dynamic has changed really dramatically, but Brexit has just shown us how you don't do constitutional change, and all of the barriers in terms of reconciliation, in terms of, you know, outlining how the governance would be in terms of persuasion. They haven't, those fences haven't just been jumped since the Brexit referendum. And I go back in many issues to John Hume, who said it's not about uniting the territory, it's about uniting people. And one thing Brexit haven't really done is unite people. So I think there's a new community who are up for a pragmatic argument. But to say, we have to do it tomorrow, we have to do it right now, we need your final answer, is entirely the wrong way to go about it.
Well, this brings me to my next question. I know it's been a tumultuous year for you in many fronts, not least because of the decision that the SDLP took earlier this year to strike up as some sort of a policy allegiance or coordination. I don't know how exactly you'd put it with Fianna Fáil. And I know that was something that you were opposed to and that you had resigned the SDLP whip in Stormont over. Micheál Martin, as you might have heard in the news bulletin at the very top of the hour, and he's in some of today's papers talking about it, he says that if he were to be elected Taoiseach or to become Taoiseach after the general election in the Republic in the next couple of months, that there would be no poll on Irish unity in his 5-year term. And he thinks that this is something which has been solely kicked off by Sinn Féin. Now, admittedly, with all of your concerns or your anxieties about Fianna Fáil put to one side for a moment, what do you make of a comment like that?
Well, I'm just hearing it from you. Sorry, I didn't catch the bulletin.
Okay.
And just for the record, I mean, as I made very clearly, my problem with that partnership was exclusivity. I've always thought it's important that SDLP is the common ground in Irish politics in the North, and that we have our good relationships as a sister party with Labour, very good relationship with Fine Gael, and very good relationship with Fianna Fáil. And I think that's better for the people that we represent. So
is that somehow compromised? And again, I don't want to go over old ground, but in your eyes, was that somehow compromised by the decision to form a more formal allegiance with Fianna Fáil, that
I think, to some degree, burning
bridges?
You keep your relationships broad. My politics are about pluralism, about the widest possible relationships. And indeed, I think that's what delivered the good election results that we had in a number of constituencies, by working and being able to attract votes from everywhere. But on the, I didn't read the comments in full, but they sound sensible to me. I mean, again, it's putting a time frame on it is always going to be challenging. But I think if you set a date and say it has to be in 3 years or 4 years, you know, that sucks every piece of politics into that orbit. We don't know what the shape of Brexit is. We don't know what the regulatory divergences are going to be between the North and South. We don't know what the trading relationship is going to be. And quite frankly, all of the bandwidth in Dublin and in London and in Belfast is at the moment consumed in trying to address that. So to say, look, we're putting the project date on this, on, you know, X date in 5 years, I think puts the cart before the horse. So I think he's sensible. That's a sensible comment.
Rational as you may see it, though, some people would say that if you continually have this litany of Taoiseach who simply rule out having a border poll, and then because they rule out having a poll, they also rule out some of the previous work that you might need to do before you get to a border poll. And you talked about how Brexit was a template of how not to go about major constitutional change. One would argue that if there's going to be a border poll at some point, you may need to have, at the very least, some sort of cohesive plan as to how you're going to integrate social services or healthcare or crime or policing or justice. And none of those things will ever happen if you do have a series of Taoiseach who are just ruling out a border poll and therefore rule out doing any of the prep work in advance of it.
Well, I would like to think that nobody's ruling out doing the preparatory work. I think I and Colm Eastwood have both been very clear. If you look at something like the New Ireland Forum in the early 80s, that's a really good model. You know, it brought in voices from, you know, across the spectrum, and it introduced a lot of solid, verifiable, balanced fact into the debate, you know, rather than people having to commission their own, you know, their own studies and so on. And it went kind of sector by sector. It looked at the integration that was already there, what could be improved. So I think you absolutely do that work. And I think once we know the lie of the land and the dust settles in Brexit, I think that should be done. I think it should be convened. And I think it should be convened in a way that does bring in different voices representing different sectors. And that's worked really well on Brexit, actually, while maybe political unionism has been reluctant. And I think we need to be understanding of that, by the way. I don't think political unionism can have any sort of a veto in this discussion. But a unionist colleague asked me, well, look, if we invited you to a forum on reimagining the union in the next century, would you be at the top of the queue to attend? You know, and I have to confess that, of course, I wouldn't. But we need a forum that brings in the many voices that, you know, have a stake and that are currently shaping society in positive ways. And I think something like the New Ireland Forum recast for this period, I think would be very, very worthwhile. And I think that can be set up, you know, pretty quickly. As I say, at the moment, I think, you know, people who are doing big thinking and people who are nation building are unfortunately dragged into sorting out Brexit. And you don't build anew, and we have to remember that it's a new Ireland we're building. You don't build a modern democratic state by just cobbling it together in order to slip it through while everybody's kind of distracted by Brexit. That's not how you do it, and that's not what will last. And potentially it will just create an inversion of what happened at partition, when you will have a very unhappy minority who feel trapped.
Some food for thought perhaps for after January the 31st, or whenever the future trading relationship has been sorted out. Claire Hannah, very good to speak to you. Thank you very much for being so generous with your time this Sunday lunchtime. Good to speak to you, and thank you very much for taking our call. That's Claire Hannah, SDLP MP for South Belfast, joining us on the line.